Good morning. It's good to be with you this morning, and the message this morning is one that I'm probably pretty passionate about, probably because I struggle with it a lot, and it's media, and we'll look at that here this today, and I thought if there's anybody that probably shouldn't preach on this, it's me, because if any of you know me, I've for 10 years already said this is one of my biggest struggles, and I look at media as being this combination here. It has lots of media on it. I have books on here. I have my computer on here. I have email on here. I have videos on here. I have social media. Pretty much any media you want is on here. I can get my Sunday school lesson on here. I can learn how to fix cars on here. Media has been very good to me. It's also been very bad to me. And so I just feel like maybe I'm not the best person in some ways to speak about this, but sometimes when you have experience, you can speak from experience. And this morning, this is one of those that I wish that I could say that I have had victory over. I'm having victory. I'm growing in it, but it's still a struggle with me every day. And I want to warn people today, really want to sound the alarm of why that is. There's a reason for that, that each one of us probably, there's more of us here probably that struggle with it than don't. But we're going to look at some of those warnings. We're going to look at some of the things that are happening. And we're going to look at our statement in our covenant about media. And as we talked about, I was encouraged Wednesday evening to see the dangers that everybody recognizes in media. The dangers that we saw. And one of the things that has been on my heart recently, and this is going to be a two-part message. So today is going to be about about the principles that we look at to discern what media we take in, and also a warning. And in my next message, I need your help. I want your help. I want to talk about one of the things I think that has been probably a big deal in my life is I know what to do quite often, but I struggle to do it. I struggle to do the right thing. And sometimes I want to do the right thing, but I don't know how to do it. And this is one of those where I think we really need to talk about. There was some good conversation that happened Wednesday night about what are some guards that we can put in place? What are some things that we can do? And so my next message I want to do about being the application of how do we apply some of this stuff? What are some things that we can do to safeguard ourselves, our children, our families? Because they are being targeted, distinctly being targeted. This morning, talking about media. Media is many things. The Oxford Dictionary says the means or agency through which communication takes place. The means or the agency through which communication takes place. There's lots of things that are communicated in many different ways. The dictionary.com says the means of communication, as in radio, television, newspaper, magazines, and the internet, that reach or influence people widely. And we have all types of media. We have books, newspaper, magazines, radios, movies, TVs, computers, cell phones, social media, video games, music, and internet. And what's funny, as I look at this list, it just dawned on me again, every one of those is on here. And we're going to look at that here in a little bit. But every one of this little device right here will cause us lots of trouble. I shouldn't even have it up here, but I do. And I thought about doing a test this morning. I thought about halfway through my message morning to send out a group me. And then see how many of you read it during church. Just a question. I didn't do it. I didn't have time. I talked to my wife about doing it earlier this week and give Todd a little heads up that I might do that or have him send it for me. And see how many of you would read the group me while we're here at church. But I didn't have time, so maybe that was providential for you guys. I'm not sure. Anyway, but there's rapid changes that happen in media. For thousands of years, it was books, and actually it was written books. So we have the Dead Sea Scrolls. We have a book there that was written in the 500s. But it was very tedious, took a long time. Then we had the Gutenberg printing press in 1440, which I would say, after doing the research for this, was probably about as big a disruptor as the cell phones are today. And I didn't realize this, but the Gutenberg printing press in 1440 was invented. It could produce 3,600 pages per workday. Well, that seems like a lot, 3,600 pages per workday. This was a significant improvement over the speed of hand printing, which everything had to be written. Everything had to be written out. You could do 40 pages a day. So from 40 pages to 3,600 pages a day is a pretty massive improvement. Gutenberg's first major printing project was the Latin Bible. He was supposed to print 200 copies, and it took him 3 years. Can't imagine how long it would have taken if he'd had to write them out by hand, but it took 3 years to print 200 copies of the Latin Bible. Before the Gutenberg's press, Europe had about 30,000 books. So this is 1440, so some from Jesus' time. And I'm sure there was the Dead Sea Scrolls were before then. So there was about 30,000 books in Europe. Within 50 years, that number had grown to 12 million books. Within 50 years, from 30,000. So it was a big, big deal. Did a little research. Now you see a printing press on here, a modern one. And this one I'm sure goes much faster than the one I'm talking about. So all you guys that know something about printing presses, just don't listen real close because I didn't do a lot of study, but I did a little bit. So the modern sheet-fed, I'm trying to make this specific, sheet-fed offset presses can operate at speeds of 21,000 sheets per day, or per hour, actually per hour. It's 168,000 pages in an eight-hour workday. So today's presses are 50 times faster than Gutenberg's press of that type. But Gutenberg was 90 times faster than writing. That kind of blew me away. If you put that number together, so we have this huge number of 168,000 pages per day versus 3,600. That seems like a massive amount. It's only 50 times. 3,600 to 40 is 90 times as many. Massive, had to have a massive impact on media as we would look at it back then. Next came the record player, 1887. And then you got 1920s. You got the radio. I don't know how many of you would listen to a radio like that, but 1920s. 1922, there were 30 radio stations and about 100,000 radios. Just a year later, so this is 1922. 1 year later, there were 556 stations and 500,000 radios had been sold and receivers, and they would be looking like those. They weren't the modern radios that we're looking at. Television was invented in the 1920s. 1928 was the first television station. In 1946, there were 8,000 households with televisions. 14 years later, in 1960, there was 45 million households with television. So when a new media comes out, it blows up. As you see, it kind of goes fast. First computer was in 1946. It was 8 feet tall, 3 feet deep, and 96 feet long. And now, today, we have this little bitty laptop that can do probably, I don't know how many thousands, hundreds of thousands of times more data than that big old thing can do. How many of you remember these? And I was shocked when I did this. The VHSs actually lasted from 1976 to 1995. That's almost 20 years. That was VHS. Now our platforms change so fast, we can't almost keep up with them. 1995, DVDs came out. The cell phone. This is my first phone. I don't know how many of you guys remember this. I mean, it reached from here to here. I mean, it was a big old phone. You can see in the hand. That is not actually a picture of my phone that I had, but that is exactly the type of phone I had. First handheld mobile phone call was made by a Motorola engineer in 1973. Took 10 years for them to become commercially available. And it was 2.4 pounds, and you could talk for 30 minutes. So imagine that. I still remember when my uncle bought one. He used to have one in his car. It was one of those car ones in a box, in a bag. I don't know if you remember those or not. I get pretty dated when I look at these pictures because I know a lot of this stuff. I saw a lot of this stuff firsthand. The iPhone was introduced in June 29th. And what's crazy, I was 33 years old when the iPhone was introduced. I was older then than most of you are right now. A lot of you are right now. That's when the iPhone came out. I was that old. I'll give a little story. The other day, my daughter didn't have her phone to go to church. And she said, "Dad, I gotta have my phone. I can't go to church." I said, "Why can't you go to church?" "Well, what if something happens?" My wife used to go to Pennsylvania without a phone when she was, that age. We used to do that. We get so used to it. It's a safety net for us. I feel like when I go away, I do the same thing. I go away, and I've already left, and I forgot my phone. I'm like, oh, what if I get flat tire? It's not so bad anymore. There's a house every 500 feet anymore, but not quite, but close. But, you know, we feel like we're lost without it. And actually, if you just enjoy the feeling, it's kind of freeing. You know, nobody's going to call you. Nobody's going to text you. You don't have to do any emergency stuff. It's all just kind of freeing if you just let it go. It's hard to do that, though. It's not something that we do real easily. But this is what the iPhone did. It took all these things. It took that phone. It took that digital camera. And I don't know how many of you remember the Walkman. And when you got one that would have the skip feature, like it would make so that it doesn't skip, oh, that was the best. You could actually walk and play your CD, and it wouldn't skip. And the computers back in the day, remember how those looked? But that is what happened. We combined all this stuff into one. And then the next thing that came along is gaming. I don't know how many of you remember that sign on that one on the left. That was me, about eighth grade in school. I mean, those green dots were awesome. It was the greatest thing. The one on the right is today. It's not a game I would recommend that you play, but what I wanted to give you is we go from covered wagons in green to full men, and like it's like real life are the games that we can play today. Then we have the internet. 1992. I last night I played the. How many of you remember? It was AOL, the dial-up. I played that for my kids last night. I was like, "Do you remember?" I said, "Oh, we recognize that sound." I don't know where they even recognize it from because they definitely weren't playing doing dial-up. I mean, you would. It was like you'd love that sound, and you would hope it would go all the way through because sometimes it wouldn't. Then you wouldn't have internet. I mean, you have to do it over again. Oh, it was. But when you went all the way through and like, oh, whew, now I can be on the internet. What a wonderful feeling. So the first dial-up, so this is good. First commercial dial-up network was made available by Sprint in 1992. That was the year I graduated. We could do dial-up. Couldn't even barely do pictures, I don't think, back then. In 1992, the first browser was invented that allowed users to see both word and picture at the same time. Before that, you could probably just see words. On the internet. I remember having a computer. And man, I got to go fast. We'll forget that. We don't have time for that. So let's look at our statement. And we talked about this statement, and this statement will probably be being revised, the wordage being revised a little bit as we go along. Because there's a lot of things, actually most of the things I'm going to talk about, half the stuff I'm going to talk about today is not on this list. Because it's newer than what we have on here. But let's go ahead and read this. We urge our members to exercise spirit-directed caution in the use of all media. And we listed there such as TV, VCR, computers, books, magazines, music, telephone usage. All those, I think, can be updated probably. They're all still valid, even though most of us probably don't use a VCR, but we could. And then we have some passages there. We're going to look at these passages here in just a little bit. But I just want to read the whole thing. Because of the powerful influence of television and because it is a matter of conscience for many, we specifically address it here. We recognize that the influence of television is generally evil, Philippians 4:8, 1 Thessalonians 5:22. It promotes violence, undermines the sanctity of marriage, and disregards the moral standards of the Word of God. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes, Psalm 101:3. And I thought about that. I thought about that verse right there. That would be the perfect verse to have taped right to the top of our TVs. If you could put that verse right there on the top of your TV, I think that would change what we view if we see that every time. If we need a principle, right there's the one. Our congregational goal is for our homes to be free from television and all evil influences. Whenever the use of any media promotes an ungodly worldview, desensitization to sin, such use of that media must be avoided. Therefore, we agree to teach and warn against the immoral use of all media, and this morning we're doing that last part. So we're looking at some of the verses that go with this. I call them principles, but this is the verses that we can look at as we look at media. There's a lot of them, so you know there's a lot of verses that apply, and some of them I actually have a few more than we have in our covenant. But we urge our members to exercise spirit-directed caution in the use of all media. 1 Corinthians 6:12, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. That's what we're going to talk about today. That verse fits today where we're at with social media perfectly. But I will not be brought under the power of any. And social media is trying to draw us in as hard as it can. And we'll look at some of that here in a little bit. 1 Corinthians 10:31. Therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all for the glory of God. Philippians 4:8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. 1 Thessalonians 5:22. Abstain from every form of evil. And then this one hit me. And I usually, when I study, I like to read verses that I'm looking at in different, not definitions, not the word I want, but translations. Thank you. That's the word I want. And this one really stuck out to me for Psalm 101, verse 2 through 4. And it's the Holmes Christian Standard Bible says, I will pay attention to the way of integrity. When will you call to me? I will live with a heart of integrity in my house. Because one of the things that stuck out to me that really hit me on our conversation Wednesday night is that all that stuff that we talked about, and I'm with, for me, probably, I'll just be honest, the TV and the movie theater has been, it's not become quite as big a deal to me as it used to be. I think that's a detriment on my part. It's because I'm being desensitized. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Because we'll see that they haven't gotten any better. But what is happening is all that stuff that we kind of said, you know, we talked about arcades, which is in the leisure thing. We talked about the movie theater. But see, what we can do now is we can bring that into our house. Before, we couldn't. But now we can. We can bring that into our house. And that's when this really stuck out to me. This verse stuck out to me when I read it. I will live with a heart of integrity in my house. Am I going to do that? Will I do that? I will not set anything worthless before my eyes. I hate the practice of transgression. It will not cling to me. A devious heart will be far from me. I will not be involved with evil. Ephesians 5:11 and 12 says, whenever the use of media promotes an ungodly worldview or desensitization to sin, such use of that media must be avoided. And you know what's interesting about being desensitized is we don't realize it most of the time. We don't realize that we've been desensitized until something wakes us up most of the time. Ephesians 5:11 to 12, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them, for it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in the secret. Proverbs 8:13, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance in the evil way, and the perverse mouth I hate. Psalm 119:104, therefore through your precepts I get understanding. Therefore, I hate every false way. Proverbs 4:14. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the path of, in the way of the evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it. Pass on. And I think is another one that really, really should influence our media. 1 Corinthians 6:20. We're going to be looking at a lot of verses here. And then I'll be reading a lot of statements. Because I want you to understand some of the... Well, we'll look at the verses here. Let's go. For you were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God. 1 Corinthians 5:6 and 7. Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed, Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Many times. We can just kind of pass over those things that we see, that we hear, and they can take us by surprise. Now, if you're like me, I'll be just honest with you. I struggle with media. It's my weakness. I've been doing better. Actually, I've been doing much better since I've been studying, because I have these passages in front of me, and I'm going, whoops, that doesn't work. But it's amazing how fast. I like reels. I like shorts. There's a reason. Most of us probably do, and there's a reason for it, because they're produced for us to like and enjoy. But things can happen so fast. You know, you can be watching reels, and you can start. If I listen to Vody Bachum or John MacArthur, I'll start getting shorts and reels, and I can listen to short little snippets, And the more I listen to them, the more I get. But I can also get, oh, a movie trailer. I can watch, oh, that looks interesting, and you watch it. And sometimes I like watching the little trailers because there's like 12, 10-minute clips that just gives you an overview of the movie, and usually it keeps all the bad stuff out. It's kind of like that. But if you watch one of those, that's all you're going to see for the next, everything you scroll until you change to, choose something else. They know. They understand. They figure it out. You got to be very, very careful, and we'll get there. But anyway, your glory is not. We so easily, do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? We watch. Are we careful with what we watch? So the two things that I want to look at today are television, movies, and streaming services. We're going to look at those and the dangers of those. And then we're also going to look at social media. Those are the two that I feel are of great danger. There's many more, but there's so much stuff. As we look at social media, if we look at media, how many of you, I don't know, I'm not going to make you raise your hands, but if you homeschool, how many of you could homeschool without media? Couldn't do it. We can't go to school without media. You know how many times I've fixed something because I was able to look at it on YouTube? I could not figure it out. I did a YouTube video and I could fix it in 5 minutes. It's amazing. It's awesome. I love it. There's good things about media. So I'm not saying that there's not good uses of it. But if you look at the statistics, very little of media is used for that purpose on the whole sense of the grand scheme of all the media that's out there. And so I'll actually be reading this morning. So now we've looked at the godly principles, at the spiritual side of things. I'll be reading a bunch of stuff to you from people that are not Christians, that have their concerns about media. They have their concerns about what we're watching, what we're taking into our body, into our minds. And these are people that have concerns that have no spiritual conscience. We should also have those same concerns, but we also have the whole spiritual side of things that should give us even more concerns about the media that we take in. So I have a question, and this is a question that I had to ask myself. Why does the statement in our covenant, because the powerful influence of television and because it's a matter of conscience for many, we specifically address it here, feel outdated? Why is it no longer a matter of conscience? I think about that. And I'm just as guilty as anybody. I'm not saying that any of you should feel guilty about it any more than I do. I would be there. The movie theater in the leisure and recreation section, I would say, is very similar and has a less negative connotation today than it used to. Why is it no longer a matter of conscience to many people? Is it because the shows have become less violent? Is it because there's less swearing, less nudity, less violence? Well, we'll see in a little bit that's not true. Are there more wholesome, family-friendly shows on TV and movies and in the movie theater? I'd say there are. There are more, but one is not a lot more. There's not a lot of more movies. If you look at the percentage of movies, it's not even a percent if you would look at them. So there's more than there used to be. I don't disagree with that statement at all. There are more than there used to be, but the percentage is still pretty small. So I want to read an article that I came across, and I'm just going to read it real quickly here. The enemy desensitizes us until we are numb to the things of God, until conviction fades. For example, why do so many enjoy movies and programs that glorify illicit sex, witchcraft, the occult, extreme violence, vampires, and child sacrifice? Incredibly, what God calls an abomination is today's entertainment. Isn't that interesting? What God calls an abomination is today's entertainment. We have no time for prayer and devotion, but plenty of time for entertainment. Do you see the disconnect? We rationalize watching and listening to questionable material because in many cases, we've been desensitized. Let's be honest. We enjoy it. Excuses are often packaged in phrases such as, I have liberty to watch this. Or it's no big deal. Everyone is doing it. Well, this guy's personal favorite, and one that I've heard myself used. I need to watch these things so that I can relate to the culture. How many of you have heard that being said? I need to watch these things so I can relate to the culture. But we must remember that liberty has limits, The key is to ask, will it build me up spiritually or pull me down? A Christian once told me, I don't worry about what I watch or listen to as long as my heart is right. Sadly, this comment came from a youth pastor. It's an indication of how far we have drifted. To suggest that these types of programs are neutral simply reflects a lack of spiritual discernment. Some animated allegories of good and evil can carry a good message. However, when evil is portrayed as good and we become obsessed with watching them, we've crossed the line. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, Isaiah 5:20. There are gray areas. This I clearly understand. But illicit sex, enchantments, witchcraft, familiar spirits, wizards, extreme violence, and child sacrifice are not gray areas, even if portrayed as good. Darkness should not entertain the church. There should be a different influence guiding us. What we watch and listen to affects the heart. It's impossible to separate the two. This generation in large number suffers from hopelessness and depression. Suicide is an epidemic among our young adults. Surely one has to wonder if there's a correlation. And he asks this question. He says, do we really think that these types of movies are not going to affect us or our children? Do we really believe that these are simply fun, entertaining shows with no spiritual ramifications? And I think a good test that would be good for all of us to use, how many of you would watch what you watch, would put it up on screen here at church this morning? How much of what you watch could we put on that screen this morning in front of everybody? Be a pretty good indication of what we're watching, I believe. How many of you would watch the stuff that you watch with your parents, youth? How many parents would watch what you watch with your youth in front of you? It's a good indication that maybe we should not be watching what we're watching if some of those things come up. So I want to come back to my question that I had at the beginning. Why do TVs and movie theaters seem so much less dangerous? I would say it's not because they've become any more pure, but because of what we compare them to has become much more dangerous. And we'll see what some of that is here in just a little bit. This is VidAngel statistics. And they're pretty sad statistics. So they looked at the overall stats for profanity, sexual content, and violence in TV and movies for 2022. And here's what they found. 37 counts of profanity, blasphemy, and foul language per hour. 15 counts of sexual content, nudity, or immodesty per hour. 13 counts of violence, blood, or gore per hour. 75 counts of potentially offensive content per hour. If you look at how many seconds, how many minutes are there in an hour? There's 60 minutes in an hour. But there are 75 total counts of potential offensive content per hour. That's more than one per minute on the average movies and TV shows that we watch today. Here's another thing that can kind of open our eyes. The rating with the most counts of violence, blood and gore, and I don't know a lot about these ratings, but it's TVY7, which means it's appropriate for 7-year-olds and older. Actually has the most violence, guts, and gore. Most of it is cartoon, but it still has the most. And here's another one that may surprise us. Maybe not. Not if you've watched. So here's the thing that I've discovered. So I don't know, it was a couple weeks ago. I was watching a movie that I thought was a pretty good movie. I remember it from my young days, way back in the day. I used to go to the movie theater. So just so all of you know, most of what we've discussed usually here in church, I've done. I've come from there. I used to go to the movie theater. I remember this movie. It's a pretty good movie. It was a pretty clean movie, too. So I sat down and I started to watch it, and I'm not sure which one of the children was with me. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I didn't know that was in there. I don't remember that. Oh. And it was full of it. And it didn't dawn on me until I had somebody beside me that I really didn't want to watch that stuff. And I would challenge you, I was going to do this later, but I would challenge you, when you watch me yesterday, studying in the middle of my message, I'm addicted, got to watch some reels. All of a sudden a reel pops up and I start watching it. You know, they're 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And all of a sudden there's cuss words and a murder before I could do anything about it. I couldn't flip. I couldn't stop. It was fast. 20 seconds. I would like, and I'm going to look at, so we have all these statistics, and we say, oh, there's no way there's that much. Start counting them. I ask you to. The media that you watch, start counting them. Keep track of them. There will be way more than you know, than you realize. We have become desensitized. And we're the conservative ones in our world today. We ourselves are desensitized way too much. Here's another thing that where I was going with this. So we say PG-13 or rated R. You know, PG-13 is okay, but probably shouldn't watch. We shouldn't watch rated R. PG-13 is no better. Has the same amount anymore than rated R. You can't go by the ratings. There's not. So there's very little difference in the counts of sex, nudity, and immodesty in PG-13 and R-rated movies. So I think probably what is the difference is the profanity, possibly. But you're still allowed to have certain amount of swear words in PG-13s before they go to rated R. So to put those numbers in perspective, movies and TV shows in 2022 had 9 times more profanity, blasphemy, and foul language than in 1980. So 9 times more than in 1980. They also had 5 times more sexual content, nudity or immodesty, and 5 times more violence, blood, and gore. Since 2000, offensive language, sexual content, and violence has increased by 173%. Of course, there's something 2022 had that 1980 and even 2000 didn't. And this is my point. This is where I'm going. Streaming services. We do not have those. TV stations that broadcast to the public have had, I don't think they do as much anymore, kind of had to be held back about what they could show to the public. But when Netflix came out, the floodgates were wide open. And so I think that's part of the reason that we can look at these movies and TV shows today that have way more violence than they ever have had before and say, it's not as bad because of what we're showing them up against. The rise in offensive content really started rising sharply in the last decades since the launch of original streaming content. For example, Netflix, the first Netflix original series, The House of Cards, which launched in 2013, and it had 13 episodes. So think about this. In 13 shows, this is what was on there. 199 counts of profanity. So you take 200 and divide it by 13, and that's how many times. And a show is, you divide that by 13 and divide that by 45 minutes, you're coming down to a lot of profanity. 51 counts of blasphemy, 25 counts of sexual content, and 26 counts of nudity in the first season. 26 counts of nudity means there was at least 2 on average per show of nudity. Here's a chart that kind of talks about the instances per hour. And this is, and I can't, foul language, sex, nudity, and immodesty, and violence, all that's on there. So if you look at 1980, it was less than 10, I believe, per hour. And today, 2022, we are 6 times. And it seems to double about every 20 years. It was 2.5 times in the last 20 years. I'm really curious, well, I don't want to know how much worse it's going to get in the next 20 years. And again, as I said earlier, I believe this is why TV and movie theaters seem less offensive, even if they have bad content, is because of the streaming services that are out there. I have to go really fast. The National Library of Medicine says this. They've found this. Research has found that the more time individuals spend watching violent media depictions, the less emotionally responsive they become to violent stimuli. So the more they watch, the less it affects them. The less sympathy they showed for victims of violence in the real world. So it desensitizes us to other people's pain, the more violence that we watch. In a series of studies with children aged 5 to 12, Funk and colleagues demonstrated that habitual usage of violent video games was associated with reduced empathy with others in the need of help. And we say it doesn't affect us. It does. And these are studies not done by Christians. So I'm not citing facts to you by Christians. This is the world coming up with these statistics, and they have concerns. Next, we want to talk about social media really quickly. And this one I think really applies. 1 Corinthians 6:12. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And what I want to show you today is that they are trying to get you under their power as fast and as hard as they can, because there's money in it. And we'll look at that here in a little bit. So there's the average time spent per day by the U.S. adults on select social media platforms. You've got TikTok at the highest, almost an hour per day that people spend on TikTok. This is adult users. YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, Reddit. Now, I can say that I am doing much better than a lot of people because I only have an issue with one of these. Just put it out there. Not really. But actually, the only one that I know I even have anything to do with is YouTube on this list. But then the sad thing is the time's probably not too far off. That's the sad part. It's the part I'm not so proud of. A former Facebook executive has spoken out about the harm the social network is doing to civil society around the world. Chamath Palihapitiya, who joined Facebook in 2007 and became its vice president for user growth, said he feels tremendous guilt about the company he helped make. I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works, he told an audience at Stanford Graduate School of Business, before recommending people take a hard break from social media. And hard break means none. That means zero. Palihapitiya's criticisms were aimed not only at Facebook, but at the wider online ecosystem. The short-term, dopamine-driven feedback loops we've created are destroying how society works, he said, referring to online interactions driven by hearts, likes, thumbs ups, no civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. And it's not an American problem, he says. It's a global problem. He says he tries to use Facebook as little as possible and that his children are not allowed to use it. And he later adds, though, that he believes the company overwhelmingly does good in the world. But he doesn't even let his children use the product that he developed. And I'm going to talk about that more in my next message. There's a lot of stuff happening in Silicon Valley where they're not letting their children have it because they understand the addictiveness of it and some of the stuff that we are going to be looking at. So we're being deliberately targeted. And I'm going to flip on over. Yeah, because I think that's the verse that we really need to look at while we're doing this. We're deliberately being targeted. One morning in April this year, designers and programmers and tech entrepreneurs from across the world gathered at a conference centered on the shore of the San Francisco Bay. They had each paid up to $1,700 to learn how to manipulate people into habitual use of their product. That's what they were there for. They paid $1,700 to learn how to make you become a habitual user of their product. That's what it was all about. The course created by conference organizer Nir Aya. Aya, 39, the author of Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. Doesn't that sound fun for us? How to build habit-forming products. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get us hooked. And we wonder sometimes why we can't. It's just a struggle to beat this thing. The technologies we use have turned into compulsions, if not full-fledged addictions. It's the impulse to check a message notification. It's the pull to visit YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter for just a few minutes, only to find yourself still tapping and scrolling an hour later. None of this is an accident. He writes, it is all just as the designers intended. He explains the subtle psychological tricks that can be used to make people develop habits, such as varying the rewards people receive to create a craving, or exploiting negative emotions that can act as triggers. And this I didn't realize. So it's feelings of boredom, loneliness, frustration, confusion, and indecisiveness often instigate a slight pain or irritation and prompt almost an instantaneous and often mindless action to quell the negative sensation. And what do they say is that? Right here. But they also say that it leads to more of it. It leads to more loneliness, more boredom, more frustration, more confusion. So it's a repetitive cycle that draws us in. Sean Parker, Facebook's first president, had some harsh words about the social network during an interview this week. The tech investor said Facebook was designed to exploit the way people fundamentally think and behave. There have been unintended consequences, Parker said, now that Facebook has grown to include 2 billion people. 2 out of every 7 people on the planet have Facebook. It literally changes our relationship with society with each other. It probably interferes with productivity in weird ways, and God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. And this is one of the first presidents of Facebook admitting this. Parker drilled into the addictive nature of Facebook that keeps so many of us coming back. He said it's all by design because receiving a like or comment on your post gives you a little bit of dopamine. It's a social validation feedback loop, exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. But that didn't matter to people like Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, he said, or Kevin Systrom, a founder of Instagram, which Facebook owns, or even himself. In addition to co-founding Napster in 1999, he started Airtime, a video social network that never gained traction. Now he's the founder and chair of the Parker Institute for Cancer for Immunotherapy. He says this, the creators understood this consciously, and we did it anyway. We understood what we were doing. We understood that this is going to draw people in, and we did it anyway. We understood that there could be negative consequences to this, and we did it anyway. And we'll see here in just a little bit why. 87% of people wake up and go to sleep with their smartphones. The entire world has a new prism through which to understand politics, and Williams worries that the consequences are profound. Marcelino, and if anybody wants to, I have a sheet that has all my sources for all this data. So if somebody wants it, I'll gladly give it to you. Marcelino, 33, left the Bay Area and is now in the final stages of retraining to be a neurosurgeon. And he was also in the tech world. I'm not sure what he was part of one of the big ones. He stresses he is no expert on addiction, but he says he has picked up enough in his medical training to know that technologies can affect the same neurological pathways as gambling and drug use. These are the same circuits that make people seek out food, comfort, heat, and physical intimacy, he says. You know, and we would never, and we've talked about this never, so we'd know, you will know today, that this is an addictive thing. Would we ever, and we say, well, we know it's addictive, but, you know, I really like it. I want to do some of it. I'll control it. How many of you would give your kids marijuana or cocaine and say, you know what, gives you a really good buzz, feels really good, just control it. Just control it. Just be careful with it. How many of us would do that? But too many times we do that with social media, which is known to be addictive. The most seductive design, Harris explains, exploits the same psychology susceptibility that makes gambling so compulsive. Variable rewards. When we tap those apps with red icons, we don't know whether we'll discover an interesting email, an avalanche of likes, or nothing at all. It is all the possibility of disappointment. It is the possibility of disappointment that makes it so compulsive. And it's that, and this is that it explains how the pull to refresh mechanism, wherever a user swipe down, pause and wait to see the content appears, rapidly becoming one of the most addictive design features in modern technology. How many of you know? We all know. You pull down, it refreshes the screen, right? There's one guy that came up with that. Everybody took it on because it's addictive. It's like pulling the arm on a slot machine. You know, if you go to a slot machine, often they still have an arm that you pull. It's not, you don't just push a button. You pull the arm. There's something about that. And they say there's something about swiping the screen that's addictive, that brings you back. Each time you're swiping down, it's like a slot machine, Harris says. You don't know what's coming next. Sometimes it's a beautiful photo. Sometimes it's just an ad. And that's what adds to the whole thing of it. Harris believes that tech companies never deliberately set out to make their products addictive. They were responding to the incentives of an advertising economy, experimenting with techniques that might capture people's attention, even stumbling across highly effective design by accident. He explored how LinkedIn exploits our need for social reciprocity, I can't say the word, to widen its network, how YouTube and Netflix autoplay videos and next episodes, deriving users of a choice about whether or not they want to keep watching. They do that intentionally. They intentionally make the next video play automatically because the rate of people staying on is so much higher. Snapchat created its addictive Snap Streaks feature, encouraging near constant communication between its mostly teenage users. And we have somebody in our family that loves, cannot break the Snapchat streak. Gotta have that. Gotta have my phone for 30 seconds today, Dad. I don't want to break the streak. It's addictive. They do it on purpose. And this is what's scary. The techniques these companies use are not always generic. For the most part, it's generic. It's just our human nature to know some of this stuff. So to make the like button that used to, Facebook's like button used to be blue, never was used. They changed it to red, and it got used all the time, and other people started to make sure that their buttons were red. It was that much of a difference, just the color. And that's just human nature. It's generic, as we would say. It's generic. The techniques these companies use are not always generic. They can be algorithmically tailored to each person. An internal Facebook report leaked this year, and every time we find out something about this, it's always a leak. Facebook, social media, they never want to put this stuff out there because they know if they do, there'll be reactions to it. For example, revealed that the company can identify when teens feel insecure, worthless, and need a confidence boost. So Facebook can tell when that happens. Such granular information, Harris adds, is a perfect model of what buttons you can push in a particular person. You know how to push that button. And this is how tech companies exploit that. And this is how Facebook exploits that. Tech companies can exploit such vulnerabilities to keep people hooked, manipulating, for example, when people receive likes for their posts, ensuring that they arrive when an individual is likely to feel vulnerable or in need of approval or maybe just bored. So you can post something, somebody can like it. Facebook will wait to send that like to you until because they know that you get the biggest rush out of it when you're bored, lonely. That's when you get the biggest rush out of a like, and it's what makes you really want this. They can wait to send that like to you till their algorithm thinks that you are one in that. That's scary. That's really scary. That they can do that. And the very same techniques can be sold to the highest bidder. And this is where this all comes from, is because it pays really, really well. Because all that information can be sold. And these very same techniques can be sold to the highest bidder. There's no ethics, he says. A company paying Facebook to use its levers of persuasion could be a car business targeting tailored advertisements to different types of users who want a new website. Think about it. Facebook. You go on Facebook Marketplace and you're looking for a Chevy truck. How many Chevy dealers would pay good information, big money to have that information? Because I know that this person went on Facebook Marketplace and he was looking for a Chevy truck. There's a pretty good chance. The chances that I can sell him a truck are much better than just going and finding somebody on the street. So I'll pay really good money for that information. That's why Facebook is gathering all this information. They're using all this information because it pays big money. Because they have all this stuff. Think about all the different stuff that's on Facebook Marketplace that we look for, that people, maybe a store sells, and you can, you know, we say it. Sometimes we talk about something. I think more often it's because we searched for something. All of a sudden the ads come up for that stuff. Somebody paid Facebook, social media, whoever, to place that particular ad right there because of what you were searching, talking. It's all right there. Scary. The other thing that social media does, it limits our ability to focus even when turned off. Rosenstein, who also helped create GChat during a stint at Google and now leads a San Francisco-based company that improves office productivity, appears more concerned about the psychological effects on people who research shows touch or swipe or tap their phone 2,617 times a day. Think about that. You touch, swipe, or tap 2,617 times a day, this little piece right here. There is a growing concern that as well as addicting users, technology is contributing toward so-called continuous partial attention, severely limiting people's ability to focus and possibly lowering IQ. One recent study showed that the mere presence of a smartphone damages cognitive capacity even when the device is turned off. If it's just laying there, turned off, it can distract you. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's something we need to be concerned about. Everyone is distracted all of the time. And that's true. That is too often true. Williams, 35, left Google last year and was on the cusp of completing a PhD at Oxford exploring the ethics of persuasive design. He said his epiphany came a few years ago when he noticed he was surrounded by technology that was inhibiting him from concentrating on the things he wanted to focus on. He was surrounded by technology that was keeping him from focusing on the things that he wanted to focus on. He says, isn't technology supposed to do exactly the opposite? He said he had an epiphany there. Delays development. We're almost done here. Sorry. Delays development. Research published in the journal JAMA Pediatrics found that one-year-olds who had 2 or more hours of screen time a day, and I'm not sure how a one-year-old gets 2 or more hours, 2 or more hours of screen time a day, were 61% more likely to have developmental delays. Whistleblowers, again, we see that, whistleblowers, because the social media will never give you these numbers. They will never give them. They use them, they know them, but they will never give them to you. Whistleblowers such as Francis Hahn and Bejar have shared internal data from companies like Meta that point to a harmful relationship between teenage girls' use of Instagram and their mental health. And just really quick, some stats from YouTube, my favorite channel. After 18 years of content delivery, you'd expect YouTube to be pretty big, and it is. As of May 2024, it is reported that its current user base is 2.7 billion people per month. About 122 million people use it every day. 1 billion hours of content is watched every day. 1 billion hours of content is watched every day. The estimation is that there is 500 hours worth of new data, new videos uploaded every minute. 500 hours a minute is uploaded into YouTube. That's 30,000 hours every hour. 30,000 hours of YouTube every hour is loaded up. About 720,000 hours per day. There's about 150,000 new videos every minute that are uploaded into YouTube. 82% of people use YouTube as a source of entertainment. 18% use it specifically to follow brands and companies. 7% use YouTube as a way to strengthen their professional work. And 37% of viewers aged 30 to 49 use YouTube as a news source. Now, I've never done that. I guess I'm too young. I'm really close, though. I'm only a year older. But to use YouTube as your news source, I'd be a little leery about that. But anyway, so just a few questions to think about. And I want to talk about next time. So how does social media affect us, whether the social media is good or bad? How many hours of do you spend on social media each day? How close do you come to some of these averages? Excessive social media also has costs, including addiction, anxiety, loneliness, depression, reduced self-esteem, sleep disturbances, and reduced ability to develop meaningful relationships. An average person in the U.S. spends 2 hours and 3 minutes per day on social media. And I challenge you to check that out. 2 hours and 3 minutes per day. Do you better than that or worse than that on social media? A recent study found that on average, children get their first phone at age 12. That means the average American is expected to spend approximately 12 years of their life looking at their phone. So if you're 12 years old and you get a phone today, and that's I don't think that's a good average, because I think we're going to be seeing it more. And so it's going to be more and more that we have to use it just for everyday things in life, I believe. My point here, due to being deliberately targeted, we cannot be neutral on social media. We cannot be neutral. We have to actively resist. And that's what I want my next message to be about. And I want some help from you guys. We had some really good discussion on Wednesday night on what are some things that we can do about social media. Where can we go? What are some things that we can do as a family? What are some things we can do personally? And I want to come back, because there's good things that we can use media for. Like I said, I use YouTube to fix stuff all the time. Saves me a ton of money. But that's a very small percentage of why I use YouTube. But it's there. There's good uses for social media. So challenge you. I'd like to hear from you, from different ones of you, how you are doing, actively combating this in your family and in your life.